You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. I'm your host, Ruhi Snyder, and today joining me again is my dear friend, the extraordinary Christine Henk. And we left off, Christine, when we were talking in our voice ownership. That's what we called it when we recorded it, the ownership of our voice about we were left it in terms of the influences, people, writers, ideas, all of those things that have shaped and influenced us into becoming the kind of people we are, our ideologies and all of that. And I thought that was such an interesting topic to delve into. So here we are talking about influences that shaped us. Welcome to Sleep in Society.
Thanks. Hi, Ruhi.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
You become more and more complimentary with your introductions every time.
I'm sorry that I wasn't in the first place. perhaps that's something I should have done from the very beginning.
Well, you know, you're bumping my ego up a little bit here.
I think it's a good thing, my friend.
Yeah.
We all need that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So influences that shaped us. You know, I always think some topics are less complex than the others. But the more I start diving into them, the more I realize that actually it's all very complex. Some are just more fun, I think. Right. And I think going through this idea of influences, it's been a tremendous journey back into going into my pre-adolescence and adolescence and then right now. And so do you want to start? Do you want to start with the first
you
thing?
You want me to start? Okay. All right. So we've been mulling over this topic for a while, like as you said. And off the top of my head, if I was stopped on the street and asked to name people who've influenced my creativity and my viewpoints on life, there are two I'd spit out without having to think. And those are two that once I say them, you'll know and whatever, we'll go through that. But I really wanted to go deeper with this and really think about people who may have just kind of had a seat in the background for a while. And only when I actually sat down to think about it had I realized, oh, wow, this person really made a mark, whether I realized it at the time or not. So I'm thinking that a couple people I mentioned may be a little bit surprising to you. The first one I'm sure is going to be pretty surprising to you. So I went back into some of my earliest memories of pop culture and things that I decided I liked when I realized I had the option to make those decisions. And so the first person I'm going to tell you about is Madonna.
Awesome.
For me, it kind of started out with just liking her music and because she was really popular as I was really understanding that I enjoyed music and fashionable by 80s standards anyway. Because looking back, oh my goodness, there were some crazy things that came out of 80s fashion. but she was just a really strong female presence. And I don't necessarily agree with her viewpoints on what is appropriate as far as sharing personal experiences. I'm a little bit more reserved and private when it comes to those things. But you can't deny that she is who she is and she's comfortable with it. And she doesn't apologize for being herself. And she just likes what she likes.
She really pushed boundaries. Like that's what
really
was
did.
Really amazing to me, that she really pushed it. And anybody who does that, really, I have nothing but respect. And it was also so much about feminine power, which
right.
I really loved for sure.
Right. And well, the thing what I why I go to her as opposed to some other like feminine power and people who really throw their sexuality out in your face, because she absolutely did that, was that it was so obvious that it was her doing it. It wasn't like the it wasn't being forced upon her from the people who were in the background. Like, that was her, because she was like that in her 20s. She's like that now, and she's, what, in her 60s now? Like, she's toned it down a bit, obviously, but it's always been her. Like, mm-hmm. She's over-sexualized, but it's because that's her. And I respect that in a way that it's just, you know, that was her decision to be this mm-hmm. way. That's, and she put it out to the world, and some people hated it and scoffed at her, but some, like, you can only respect someone that is that so open about who she is.
And authentic. I mean, that's yeah. what part of that was, that she was quite mm-hmm. authentic in her representation of herself.
Right.
Which is always,
and
again.
And so independent mm-hmm. and competent. And just, I mean, as she grew up or, you know, matured and had children of her own, you know that she's presenting to her kids a role model. She's a present mother and mm-hmm. and artist. And so, yeah. So that was my first one that I thought would be a little bit surprising, given the people that we have discussed. She was kind of outside the box in that. Mm-hmm. In that sense.
No, but I totally see that for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, she made like a definitive mark, like, but I, you know, definitely a very strong presence mm-hmm. in terms of pop culture, in terms of my adolescence for sure. Right. Very present. Interesting.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you go first?
I would go to Margaret Atwood, the Canadian author, the first, like, the first real, like, smack on the head kind of realization mm-hmm. was the book I read in my teens was The Edible Woman. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading it, I couldn't stop thinking about it, because I think the reason for that is because it was so the ideas that I had grown up with, or the way that my thinking was influenced, and we've discussed this before, by my parents as well, who were very mindful of the society in which we were growing up. Which, you know, in India, which was quite patriarchal and very paternalistic. And but they weren't like, you know, it wasn't like, here are your gender studies. That's not how my parents educated us. It was very subtle. They were very subtle in their education, mostly because they wanted to give us skills. But when I read that, everything that I'd been experiencing in terms of my education and my ideas, it kind of made complete sense, because it was about, I think she wrote that in 1960s. And it was more about, at that point, what the idea of a perfect suburban wife was supposed to be, right? Like, that you were educated, but you weren't in the workforce. Your main thing was your husband, looking after your husband, looking after your children. And it was that she really delved into the how this particular character was being subsumed by these ideas of what she was supposed to be. And her subsumption, like, as she's being consumed by that, she can't eat food anymore. And it was such an incredible, like, concept that it just literally, like, I don't know, everything kind of opened wide within my brain. Mm-hmm. And that book stayed with me and still does for the longest time. So that was one of mm-hmm. the first books that kind of literally smacked me on my head mm-hmm. and really conceptualized for me all of the teachings and ideas that I've been kind of forming in my head, but they weren't fully conceptualized until I actually read that book.
Yeah, and I have started to read that book.
Oh, how are you liking that?
I'm like 3 pages in.
Yeah.
I've just started, but I'm really excited to read more.
Yeah.
At your suggestion.
It was cool because I found that book in my school library. And when I got that, I was very intrigued by the title alone. I didn't know what that meant. When it says the edible woman, you're just like, what does that?
Is she like a gummy bear?
Yeah, what does that even mean? And I was so intrigued by that, that when I started reading it, and I was like, wow, this is like incredible understanding going into understanding of gender roles in society and how women were viewed, like, especially because my idea of like Western society coming from India was like, it was very open, it was very free, you know, that everybody had equity and equality. And then you start reading this stuff and you're like, oh, wait, like, that's not the case. This is not what's happening. And here she expressed it in this incredible book. When I first came here, I was just devouring fiction, like all kinds of different fiction. And some of them really kind of left a mark on me, like this particular one, because I read a lot. That was my way of getting myself an introduction to the society that I was coming in, which I had very little knowledge of, right? Mm-hmm. My knowledge was basically Archie comics that somebody had left.
Oh.
I was like, is that what the schools are like? Like, is this how they live? Like, I had no idea. And then when I arrived, and then I was like, wait, like, I have no idea what this is about. And the fact that there were books everywhere, that was one of the most delightful experiences of my adolescence, because to have access to books was something of such a profound privilege, such a profound gift. So yeah, I went through the school's library, and then I went through all the other libraries fairly quickly.
Nice. So you're a reader.
Oh, love it. I would actually say yes, I am. Actually, I read all the time.
And there's so much in, you know, if as a reader, like, you can, there are so many people who can influence you in the way that they write and the way that they describe experiences or present new ideas. So we really have a ton of options as far as influences go. So to stand out really means something.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You can, if I started writing the list, which I tried to do, I thought, okay, we'll give each other a minute to list all of the people that I've kind of influenced. Like, it went on. And I thought, I'll just have something that really still in my mind still stands out and has had made an incredible impact and transformed me or transformed my ideas or kind of solidified certain concepts I had because they were so beautifully expressed in like ideas, whether nonfiction or fiction, because I lean heavily towards nonfiction. So to me, that's also very interesting as we started talking about this. I was like, wow, this is going to be an interesting conversation. And so who's your next one, then?
So my next one is also an author.
Yes.
And someone we have spoken about several times. So Toni Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose her because she's opened up a world for me that I would never otherwise understand. And I use the word understand very loosely. I'm using air quotes all over the place with understand. So, as you know, she is an African-American woman and writes about Black culture in America. And I grew up in an area of New York with a great amount of diversity. And I really, really love and appreciate that about my upbringing, especially now because I live in a place that there isn't a ton of diversity.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I have the capacity to teach my children that everything they see in front of them isn't necessarily everything there is to see. So you have to keep your eyes open and keep your mind open to new experiences and new ideas all the time. So thinking about it a lot, because this was a hard one to explain exactly what, why she is such an influence. So I think that that's what she's done for me, is that in reading her books, Jose was like, okay, well, sure, Chris, you may have black friends and you have black classmates and neighbors. And in school, you learn about slavery and segregation and lynchings in the South and the Civil War. But that feeling that I had in my stomach as I'm reading these books about the culture in black households and in black neighborhoods, that is really what black history is. And it's something that I won't ever fully understand because I'm a white person, so I won't understand what it is to grow up in a different body. But because of her ability to convey a story and a feeling, I acknowledge that I don't understand it. But rather, I realize that there's always more than what is right in my face. So that's really what she's done for me, is taken something that I will never experience in my life and I'll never fully understand, and at least put enough out there so that I know that there are other things to know, and there are other ways of living, and there are other ways of sacrificing and being held back that I won't ever know, but I have to understand that that's out there for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So also, like, as a writer, which I identify myself as a writer and someone who tries to, you know, express things creatively through words, I think there's really no better lesson than to show your audience that what you want to show them, and then sit back and make sure that you've given them enough to actually think deeply about a situation that they might not have thought deeply about before. Okay, so getting back to you, where are you going next?
So then as I went into, I entered university. I was in engineering at Queen's University. And as I entered it, it was kind of, I got in, I had really good marks. I got in, it was fantastic, but it wasn't, when I got into my first year, I realized this is not where I wanted to be. And simultaneously, I also started reading the works of James Lovelock, who is a theorist, and he wrote this thing called the Gaia Hypothesis, and which is a theory that Earth is as a self-regulating system. And I came across this theory and I thought, oh, this is very interesting. Like, Earth has like a self-regulating system. And then it really got me into systems theory. And so my 20s basically were spent studying and understanding systems theory, which introduced me to the works of Austrian biologist by the name of Carl Ludwig Bertalanffy, who was actually founding father of systems theory. And what was interesting, why it got my attention, was because if I was looking at engineering, I'm looking at closed systems, basically. Mm-hmm. But what Bertalanffy and what like James Lovelock introduced me was to the ideas of open and dynamic systems. Like, and that's something that really caught my attention. And I loved that he proposed that living systems are open, living systems are dynamic, and we're in constant interaction with our environment. And these interactions actually characterize the system. So that definitely, like, I was just sucked into it. So I spent a lot of my time, my 20s, studying that, and it totally shaped how I wanted my education to be. So I really wanted to pursue science, and I really wanted to pursue humanities, like science and humanities. And I wasn't sure how I was going to do that because there was no course out there to actually do that. And then as I was thinking about this, I started auditing a lot of courses at Queen's with my friend. who will remain unnamed, because I would actually go into her classes and audit the classes and see what I really liked and what I didn't like. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, education is money. Every course you're going to take is a lot of money. Right. And I just wanted to make sure that I kind of, it was something that I really wanted to pursue. That was something my, that was my passion. And having read all these theories, I couldn't find something that would fit the criteria until a friend of mine goes, well, I think you need to go into independent studies at University of Waterloo, where you kind of basically make your own courses and shape it however you want to shape it. And I thought, oh, this is, that's exactly what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, actually, James Lovelock and Carl Ludwig Bertalanffy kind of, and my friend, really pushed me into pursuing independent studies, which also completely shaped how I thought about research, how I thought about science, how I thought about humanities. And so doing that educated me. I created all of my courses on my own. I would pick a topic for my thesis, and then I would presented at the beginning, then I would have to write an entire paper on it, like a semester. The entire semester was dedicated to that. And then I would have to defend it towards the end of it. And so I build all these courses around what I wanted to learn, what I wanted to pursue. And I just want to say that I actually wasn't thinking about a job at the end of it, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. It was totally a selfish pursuit in terms of curiosity. Like, I was very, very curious about, and still am, about how things work and how we come to be. So that particular, those particular influences led me actually into sleep medicine eventually, because that's how I fell into sleep medicine. I was trying to do a thesis.
And that's where our story begins.
That's where our story begins. Yes. Yes.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. I don't think I ever really knew that that was how you went about your educational experience. So did you actually take courses? I'm kind of confused about what you mean when you say you created.
Oh, so you independent study was literally what it says. Independent studies is actually independent studies. So I had various topics picked. For example, I really wanted to pursue theory of relativity. I mean, literally, I wanted to pursue it, but in a more theoretical sense, like how it came, what does it mean? How did Einstein come to that idea? Not in terms of mathematical, I wasn't pursuing it from a mathematical level. I was pursuing it in terms of history of it, because okay. I was very curious about it. So I wrote a paper on that. And then the next paper was on quantum mechanics, because I wanted to look at the history of quantum mechanics, how quantum mechanics came to be, what did various theories mean. And so I did an entire historical perspective on quantum mechanics, and it was titled From Atoms to Quarks. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to study the Vedas and its implications in terms of the Indian caste system. So I pursued that for a semester. So I wrote a paper on that. And then I wanted to know how a human mind created a thought. So I went into and started pursuing how we create our ideas on precepts and concepts. And about memory, like how does brain, what is memory and where is it located in the brain? What does it mean? And what does it mean in terms of shaping our consciousness? By the end of all of this, you had to create like a mega thesis. Basically take everything you have pursued over the past 3 years and bring it together into a grand master thesis. And that's how I got into sleep medicine. Because I was trying to pursue something that would kind of bring all of these topics, which was philosophy and psychology and physics kind of together mm-hmm. into something. And so that's kind of sleep was really interestingly incorporated all of that. And I kind of fell into it because I had a really good friend whose father was in sleep, right, and really actually pushed me into that field. And then I was like, wait a minute, sleep is so much more interesting. It and it's paying me.
Yes.
And one gets paid. So there was that part too. Suddenly I had a job, which was very intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm. See, everything came together. That's good. That's a very interesting way to go about things, though, because you think of needing to have like a structure and beginning to end, and at the end of that, there's your job. But yeah, you kind of blew up that idea of a structured system and went outside the box because of these authors. And that's fantastic. That's quite interesting.
I think it was fun. I don't think I was thinking about anything. I think I just literally wanted to just pursue and be curious
gain
and
knowledge.
Wanted to. Yeah, and still am. I'm still very much into that. I love diving deep into things, like really going as far as my brain can take me. I really, really enjoy that. I enjoy the complexity and the messiness of all of it, for sure. So that brings me to you. Your turn.
Back to me.
Yes.
So I'm looking at my second half of my people, and I'm like, okay, well, I obviously have a theme as of who, you know, what kind of people influence me. Because the next one is also a female singer, songwriter, and that's Fiona Apple. And she came to me, I guess, in my high school years and early college years, as she writes a lot about love and failed love and the way men can sometimes make us feel that's fantastic and the way men can sometimes make us feel that's awful. Mm-hmm. And she has a way with imagery and putting words together in a way that you're like, how did you even think to use those words for that? But you know exactly what she means.
Oh, nice.
And so I really, as a creative inspiration in telling me that don't just describe something, describe how you, like how a feeling flushes over you or how the air smells when you're feeling this thing. It's like
very descriptive.
Just took ways to describe things that you don't even think when you're in school. You know, say what color it is, say what shape it is, say how it smells, and say how hard it is and stuff like that. But no, she takes it to like 1,200 levels above that with the way she puts her words together. And she's also an insanely talented pianist, and she's got an incredible voice, and she's just a presence that you know she is completely immersed in what she's saying and what she's singing and what she's feeling with every word that she writes and word that she sings. And she's like my ultimate creative inspiration, I suppose. Like, if I could write things the way that she writes a song, I'd be pretty proud of myself. I'd give myself.
I think you should be proud of yourself.
If I could say like, oh my God, this is like Fiona Apple-esque, and I love it.
I don't know, Christine. I think I want it to be Christine-esque.
Oh well, thank you.
Yes.
Okay. If it could be parallel. Like,
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, I'd be happy either way.
that's wonderful. That's really. It's interesting when you can reach into something like that and you can say, oh, that, just the concept of that, like the way the language is being used is so beautiful that it, you know, as you said, even like with Toni Morrison and even with Fiona Apple, that it makes you kind of embody it, right? Like you just feel like you feel it.
It makes you feel
it's very,
something.
Yeah.
You know, like, where it's not just, oh, those are pretty words, or those are, that's a good way to describe it. It's like, no, I feel something. Like there's, whether it's good or bad or, you know, weird and something you've never felt before, it's just, it actually makes you feel something and understand something a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Words are extremely powerful, and, you know, if put together the right way, could change a lot of thought processes. And
yeah, language is powerful. Yeah. I think, which brings me to my next person.
Do tell.
Is science fiction writer Ursula Le Guin. So as I got into nonfiction more and more, I started delving into these topics that I really wanted to explore. She's a novelist, she's a poet, and one of the most beautiful things about her as a human was that she refused to be pigeonholed. And I think, like, and she wrote about it. She said, I think it was one of her interviews, I don't know whether it was with the New York Times or with the New Yorker, where she goes, like, don't shove me into your pigeonhole where I don't fit, because I'm all over. My tentacles are coming out of the pigeonhole in all directions. Mm-hmm. And that actually was fantastic because she refused categorization of her work mm-hmm. and herself. And I loved that about her. I loved that she could take me into places, into ideas that I hadn't even, like, thought about. Concepts that were they weren't even part of my imagination. And her work was gender-defying. It was just incredible. And I'm rereading one of my favorite books by her. It's called The Dispossessed. I'm halfway through, and this is a fourth reading. And every time I have read that book, my perception of it changes because it has everything that I want to explore, whether it's education, whether it's sociopolitical ideologies, whether it's like the economics, like the ideas of capitalism, all of it is embodied in this one book. And it's just profound. Every time I read it, it has a profound impact on how I think about my work, how I think about research, how I think about my life, how I think about how the world need to be. And it's just... And it gave me the freedom to be kind of a multitude. I loved that.
Right.
That I'm not like a thing, that I am many things. And I am a multitude. And I can be interested in everything and not be pigeonholed into a thing.
Okay, I'm curious if you were familiar with this author and that kind of concept of don't pigeonhole me. When you were in university and going through this revelation that no, none of these series of courseworks work for me. I'm going to do my own thing, because that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, right?
You just didn't allow yourself to be pigeonholed. You're like, no, I'm not going to study just that. That's ridiculous. I want to study this and this and this. So was that, were you familiar with her and that before?
No.
You made that decision?
So no.
You were already living... You were living the tentacles.
Well, I think you're living tentacles in all directions, but I don't think you can fully.
You don't understand it.
That's what you're doing, and I don't think you define yourself like I think as such. I think, mm-hmm. But you know, some people elevate you, and some people they have defined something so beautifully. That's something you've been searching for for a long while. And they, as you said, with Fiona Apple and Toni Morrison, they bring a concept. You're just like, oh, yes, that's exactly what this is all about. Mm-hmm. Like, even that's why I think certain things like Edible Woman, The Dispossessed, and, you know, systems theory, the Gaia hypothesis, all of those things have left such an incredible mark in my soul and transformed me, because I have deeply identified with those things, and those are things you really want to explore, and those have been so beautifully conceptualized that I think they are, therefore, they're transformative. And I think, no, I didn't know about her work. I came across her work later, and I think it was introduced mm-hmm. actually to me by my husband, who was he's a very big fan of science fiction, actually. Yes. He's also the person who has influenced me as well.
Okay, so my next author is Paulo Coelho. So he is a Brazilian author, probably most well known for his book, The Alchemist. And that was the first one of his books that I read. I was introduced to that, to him and that book by an ex-boyfriend of mine in university. And it helped me understand relationships. And oddly enough, because the person I was dating at the time, who I haven't spoken to in probably like 20 years now, he told me one day like that it's not his job to make sure I was happy. And at the time I was 21 and I was like, yeah, it is. You're my boyfriend. But then I, you know, as I grew up and I read this book and I'm like, okay, so I became more serene with myself and like more understanding that there's so much more in this world and we don't know everything, but if you just like kind of slow down a little bit and not have these expectations, you know, stamped on everybody that you come along with, you'll learn more and you'll understand more and bring new ideas into your life. So I hope one day I run into this guy and say, you know what, you were kind of right. And thanks for, you know, giving me that book, because I've read a ton more of his stuff since then. And it's nice. It's easy reading. And it's sometimes a little bit, I think some people would think it was far-fetched because of like the ideas of magic and, other lives. And, but I guess it kind of also depends on what you believe in and what you're open to allow yourself to think, as far as possibilities in the world and in the world beyond, if you believe in a world beyond, and all those things. So it kind of is very spiritual, and it made me realize that I have to let go of control of all things. I mean, not all things, but not try to control all things.
Everything.
Some things are just, they're just going to play out how they play out. And you have to accept people into your life in a certain way if they bring a certain energy towards you, and kind of let other people go that bring a negative energy towards you. And so whenever I read something by him, I feel like it's just like a really deep exhale. And it's like, okay, I feel, my mind feels relaxed, my body feels good, like there's no stress. And again, the way he's an author as well, the way he puts words together, but I think his are more like these really odd concepts that I never would have thought of on my own. And so I like that he brings something into my life that I never really would have thought to think of, but they're kind of like, they're just kind of swirling around in the on the outside of my head. And, you know, every now and then I'm like, oh, maybe that person was meant to, you know, walk right in front of me so that I didn't get hit by a car 3 years later. And, you know, like, it's just like, there's a connectedness to the way he brings things together.
Cool.
And I quite enjoy his books.
Yeah, I haven't read. I've heard of him, but I haven't read any of his.
There's his work. Several of them that I really, really love. I'll send you a list if you want.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll take it on. Considering.
So, do you have anyone else you want to discuss?
I do want to end with Dr. Oliver Sacks, because actually that was also finding his books. I came across his book. The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And I picked it because I'm always interested. I'm intrigued by titles. I was like, oh, isn't this interesting? That was also actually, I think, in my early 20s. And as I explored, I really liked, because he's a neurologist and a physician, and I just loved the way he approached not just science, but the humanity of his patients. And I just like it really, actually, I'm strongly influenced in terms of like, in terms of how I approach healthcare, how I approach medicine, how I approach my research, very strongly influenced by his work, because I just really liked how he, when he looked at his patient, it was he saw everything, the entire humanity of them. And he, you know, and that to me was just remarkable and beautiful. And I have always, I think, in approaching our patients, I have always tried to approach it from the humanities aspect of it, to seeing mm-hmm. the entire human being in front of me, not mm-hmm. that they're coming in with a certain disorder or, you know, I'm here to assess what it is. I like to look at the entire picture, and I'm profoundly grateful to him for that, and I love his work, and I love the way he wrote, his love mm-hmm. of language, both him and Ursula Le Guin, actually, I think, also educated me in terms of concepts and in terms of language. Considering English is my third language, I developed a deep love for language, and it's something I'm still learning. I'm still in the process of. I often forget Oxford commas according to my child. But that idea of articulation, that idea of like language and how important it is. And I try to use that everywhere. That is foundation for everything for me. How I bring concepts and how I introduce concepts, whether they are really complex or scientific and all of that, how language plays such an incredible role in shaping our ideas, in shaping how we become who we become. And I think looking at the body of work that I have gone over, I think main theme of that was that they introduced concepts that have never been introduced before in a way that's never been introduced before, like new landscapes for me that I never knew existed, mm-hmm. Beautifully packaged in this absolutely astoundingly beautiful language. And yeah, wow, reading. I recommend.
Yeah.
I highly recommend that we all read.
That's a good thing.
A lot, mm-hmm. all the time, everybody, everything we can think about. Even if you disagree with certain ideas, I think the mm-hmm. best thing to do about it is read, and then let's talk about them. Mm-hmm. Let's have a discourse. I think that's a very progressive way of looking at things.
I think we just proved what big book nerds the both of us are.
Oh, my gosh. We haven't even started
yet.
Well, I think this has been a very fun episode. It's really taken us out of our... very, very complex ones that we've been exploring.
Right. I think this is nice. It's a nice little
break
to discuss other people's thoughts and other people's
ideas.
Experiences.
Indeed. Yeah. And mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to our next conversation, which is coming up, influences that shaped us in terms of who we become and who are we, is what's going to be, I think, our next topic.
Oh, yeah?
Of conversation.
Better start thinking.
I think so, too.
Okay.
Well, thank you for joining me, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me on again. I love it.
I love it. Absolutely. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode of Sleep in Society. And I hope, like, you find lots of inspiration in terms of reading. There is so much out there. And find a book. And fall is coming. Winter is coming. Cozy up and read along. I thank you, and I will connect with you all soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @ruhisleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.